Welcome back to your Valley Sports Plug. It's the Heat Check Podcast Live. It is Tuesday, May 6th, 2025, and boy, do we have a good one in store for you tonight. I am your host, Chris Patrick, and with me tonight, my co-host, Mr. Benjamin, and making his long-awaited return, the winner, I guess co-winner of the 999 Challenge, VSP Tallman himself. Mr. Benjamin and Tallman completed the challenge. I came up just shy, 7 dogs, 8 beers. But gentlemen, how are we feeling tonight?
Chris Tallman, feeling good, feeling great. Chris let it off. Me and VSP Tallman were the only ones that were aligned in completing the 999 Challenge. Chris did give a valiant effort. If you guys haven't checked out that stream, it's available for playback right now. The timestamps are in as well, so you can see when it's kind of started going down the drain for some people. But Tallman, how are you doing tonight, brother?
Oh, fellas, doing good. I had to power through those last 2 hot dogs because I couldn't let Mike sit here and brag tonight about being the only one that completed the challenge. And then he had to one-up me and eat a 10th hot dog after the game ended just for the hell of it. But what was crazy, I went to the baseball game last night. And that was the first time I've ever gone to a baseball game and not eaten a hot dog, I think, because I just couldn't do it. I think I'm good on hot dogs for probably a couple months, but that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, but imagine the game last night wasn't a lot of fun. D-backs dropped that first game of the series to the Mets, 5-4. It was a valiant effort in the end. I don't care what anyone says. Alec Thomas was safe in second. Francisco Lindor did not get the tag, but we're going to start things off here talking about the Phoenix Suns. We are going to get into the Diamondbacks a little later on, but first, before we dive into that, I just want to ask you to like and subscribe to our YouTube channel here, Valley Sports Plug on YouTube. We go live every Tuesday for a stream like this, so make sure you're setting that notification bell so you can see when we're going live. You can also keep up with us at AZ_VSP on Instagram, X, TikTok, and so much more. Just find our link tree below in the description. This is a video podcast and stream. However, we do release the audio only version on all podcast streaming platforms. That's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and so much more. But gentlemen, let's go ahead and get into it. Today, the introductory press conference of the Suns' new GM. Oh boy, was it a doozy. What is his name? Brian, Mike, help me out here. Brian Gregory.
He's so unremarkable. You can't even remember his name. Yes, Brian Gregory, the new GM for the Phoenix Suns, had his introductory press conference today. Gentlemen, I mean, a lot of people are already kind of talking about the buzzwords, right? The alignment, making sure that we're aligned. It was interesting, to say the least. A lot of people are questioning the decision because Brian Gregory has no general managing experience at any level, right? He's been a coach for the past 30 years up until 2023. Let's look at him for a second, right? He's a ball player. He played at Navy in Oakland, so he has college basketball experience, and that's where all of his coaching experience has been. Was an assistant for a number of years, 1990 to 96 at Michigan State, Toledo for 2 years, Northwestern for 3 years. And then probably his most famous stint was his assistant coaching at Michigan State once again from 1999 to 2003 under Tom Izzo, where Matt Ishbia was a player on that team. And they reached the Final Four 3 times and they won that 2000 title. So Brian Gregory has a built-in relationship with Matt Ishbia, basically going back to almost his late teen years, right? He was a head coach for 3 different teams later on. The Dayton Flyers for about 8 years, Georgia Tech from 2011 to 2016, and then most recently was the head coach at South Florida from 2017 to 2023. But he has spent the past 2 years in the Phoenix Suns facility in a capacity, right? His first year, he was kind of a consultant, basically with Matt Ishbia just taking over the team. And then last year, he was the VP of player programming last year. Before I keep going and rambling on, I'll pass it back to Chris so you can kind of start getting your thoughts out on, you know, meeting Brian Gregory for the first time and how you're feeling so far.
Yeah, definitely going to dive into the press conference. I think a lot of the criticism that I don't think the press conference did any job of quelling is the, I don't know if nepotism is the right word, but just the appearance of maybe Matt Ishbia just picking a guy that his guy, quote unquote, but a guy that he would be able to sway easily. You know, it's a bad optically for me how Ishbia in his, you know, what is it, end of the year press conference, exit interview, whatever you want to call it, with the media, he talked about how there was going to be big changes coming when really all they did was shuffle titles in the front office. They didn't bring anyone from outside. There's a whole lot of Michigan State people. The press conference itself, the GM, the new GM, Brian Greger, he came off very unconfident. Like Mike said, he used a lot of the buzzwords. I was driving at the time, but I was tempted to pull out a pen and start keeping tabs of how many times he said alignment, we're in alignment. And all that I could hear when he kept saying me and Matt Ishbia are in alignment of is I'm going to do whatever Matt Ishbia tells me to do. So I really don't understand why he even bothered hiring a GM if he was just going to have Matt Ishbia steamroll him. And this comes with a whole other host of concerns. Being a first-time GM, no general managing experience. He kept talking about his 30-plus years of basketball experience, and that's all well and good. And I won't be all negative in talking about Brian Gregory, but I think my concern that's on the most forefront with this is that in a year where we're trying to rebuild in a sense and do it as quickly as possible, we're looking at really wanting to offload Bradley Beal most importantly, but more likely only going to be able to offload Kevin Durant. And how much of a return are you going to be able to get for that? Are other GMs out there going to nickel and dime him and take advantage of the fact that he is a first-time GM? And yeah, for now, he'll have James Jones in that senior advisory role where he can kind of lean on him and his expertise. For whatever it's worth, Josh Bartlestein is still the president of operations. And he even said in his press conference, again, alignment, him, Ishbia, Josh Bartlestein, they're all going to be involved in all the basketball decisions. They're all in alignment. I don't know. It is concerning for me, and we can dive more into it. But I'm curious, Tom, and I know you only listened to a portion of it there, but you've been hearing the buzz around this hire. What do you think so far?
Yeah, I only got caught the beginning of that press conference, and I guess vocab word of the day is going to be alignment. You said he didn't seem confident. I mean, my first takeaway just listening to the beginning of it was he sounded just very, very nervous, very unsure. I mean, his answer, he repeated himself and just kind of went around in a circle saying the same thing about being aligned, talking about their identity. And this year, I mean, it's, you could look all over, you know, this news story and a lot of different opinions on this, where people are saying it has nothing to do with him being in Michigan State, where obviously, come on, you got to be living under a rock if you think that he didn't get this promotion because of that connection with Ishbia, dating back to Ishbia's college days. So, I mean, come on, guys, this is kind of Robert Sarver-esque, where he's going to promote or hire that yes man, right? Let's be real. I mean, it's Ishbia putting up a smoke screen saying, hey guys, look, I'm hiring or I'm promoting someone to be the new GM. I'm making a change. This guy's going to make all the basketball decisions. Oh, you like those two rookies we drafted last year? Oh, guess what? He had everything to do with that. He's the reason why we hired them. So he's just putting that out there where you know damn well that Ishbia is going to be the guy. He's going to be in the driver's seat the whole time. And then even saying, giving him credit for those two draft picks, where yeah, I mean, those are two good players, right? Did they get used correctly this past season? You know, that's up for debate. Did they develop maybe the way they should have? But then how come a guy that's only been in the building for a year is the one that's making the draft selection? So somebody that's never doesn't have any NBA experience or just 1 year of being an NBA consultant. Why is he drafting your picks, your players for this franchise? So this is not, I haven't heard a single person locally or on Arizona sports radio anywhere local that's a Suns fan that's excited about this promotion or new assignment at GM for the Phoenix Suns.
And Tallman, I mean, a lot of people are feeling the same way as you are in the comments that you made about probably the yes man mentality of Brian Gregory coming in. But here, I'll be the one who's on the opposite side of the spectrum and maybe kind of give, you know, a different type of perspective in regard to that. I think what you're hopeful for is Brian Gregory coming into the system and becoming the rookie GM is that his built-in relationship with Matt Ishbia, he's going to be able to tell Matt when it's the incorrect times to make certain decisions. That's what you're hoping for, right? Because at the end of the day, he said it probably 27 times, they do have to be aligned, but hopefully, you know, you're talking about a guy who has a 27-year relationship with somebody who's known him for a very long time, who knew him before he became the multi-billionaire that he is nowadays. And I'm sure there was some kind of sense of, you know, Matt Ishbia throughout his life coming to Brian Gregory with problems or, you know, concerns and asking for guidance. So that's what you're hopeful for in regard to this kind of hiring and bringing in somebody that's that close to your owner. The big problem here, guys, is that he literally has no GM experience. Like, you're telling me that this guy is going to be able to make some of the biggest decisions that this franchise has faced in the past two decades to try and right the ship so we're not going down a spiraling effect and going back to the 2010s when we're winning 19 games for 7 to 8 years, right? This fan base can't take it at this point. And there's so many different decisions that have to happen this offseason, right? We're talking about the fourth head coach in the past 4 years. You have to talk about trying to get rid of some of these high capital guys and Bradley Beal and Kevin Durant. And then you're going to have to maneuver throughout the draft to bring in people who are probably going to have to be competitors or competitive players who have roster spots, who are getting time this next season with late draft picks. And it's his first foray into it. And that has to cause concern for any Suns fan if you're really thinking about bringing in somebody to right the ship after things have gone so southward over the past three seasons. So today wasn't the greatest start, right? You're not going to throw all the eggs in the negative basket from what happened today with Brian Gregory, because you can't. Because if that's how we're going to start off this relationship with him, we're screwed for the next 5 years, gentlemen, or we're probably screwed for a while, because this is Matt Ishbia's right-hand man. And we know Matt Ishbia ain't going damn nowhere anytime soon. So it's almost like you got to get used to it and you got to give him time to grow.
That's a good perspective to have, Mike, as far as like we can kind of clown on him for saying alignment over and over again. And what does that truly mean? I mean, that's going to be yet to be seen. But where you said that he could push back on things Ishbia is saying, if they have, you would hope that it's a two-way relationship where they kind of bounce things off each other rather than just him acquiescing to whatever Ishbia is telling him to do. I mean, you're right. The reality of the situation is that this is what we're going to have to deal with. And instead of staying negative and you know, I want him to do well, honestly. So we got to try and find the silver linings here. There are a couple more things that really stood out to me on top of saying he wants to build alignment. He also says he wants to create an identity in essence, build a culture here, a culture of winning and being together again. And I think it does start with this head coaching hire, which is another thing that stood out to me once they got to the Q&A section, which was pretty quick, honestly. He said that they're in no rush to hire a new head coach. There's no timetable. My understanding through some local reporting is that they've got about 15, 16 guys on a list that they're conducting Zoom interviews with. They're going to cut that down in half to somewhere between 5 and 10, start bringing guys in for in-person interviews. And it's very likely that we're going to get a first-time head coach. I think it's key that, you know, he might be a first-time GM, and that might be okay to pair him with a first-time head coach. They'll be able to learn together. There's no expectation that this team's going to compete for a championship in the next 2, maybe 3 years or more. You want a quick rebuild? It's possible, but not always, you know, likely, especially once you've dug yourself into a hole this deep. I mean, as far as like the coaching thing goes, I think that is going to be the most telling and most important thing. We've had a pretty bad run of head coaches. It started out really good with Monty Williams, really loved that hire, obviously loved getting to a finals appearance, but then how quickly things devolved. He wasn't talking to DeAndre Ayton. You bring in Frank Vogel, he didn't know how to talk to these guys. He lost the locker room almost immediately. And then similar things with Mike Budenholzer, where he wasn't talking to Yusuf Nurkic at the end. And it's like, you can't have a coach not talking to guys, and you can't have players that don't respect the coach. I think for me, I would like to see a head coach come in that was also a former NBA player. That's why I really like Jared Dudley a lot. I mean, you see how well Udoka has done in Houston with that young group of guys. And I was hearing a guy on the radio the other day talking about how the coach gets in and runs with these guys and is coaching them on the floor and playing, you know, pickup games with them, not pickup games isn't the right word, scrimmages in practice with them. So I don't know. I don't think there's just one way to coach, but I think from a perspective of the coach, I don't think it's a bad thing that they're hiring a first time coach. I mean, curious what you think, Tallman, as in regards to the coaching hire, because there's kind of two conventional thoughts. There's those two head coaches out there. It was Mike Malone and other guy's name escapes me, but they just lost their job. They were just head coaches in the NBA with head coaching experience versus a guy like Jared Dudley or another guy who was an assistant, maybe a former player getting his first shot. Do you have a preference either way, which you would like the Suns to go?
Yeah, I'd prefer, you know, I'm going to use the term no name, I guess, or a former player, because we've already done the, you know, go get the splashy hire, right? I mean, this is going to be the fourth coach in four seasons, right? So, I mean, maybe going out and trying to chase Malone is not going to be the best option, because you already did that and picked from the top candidates the last two seasons and it didn't work out. I do like the Jared. That's a good one. I also heard some people throw around Chris Paul's name. Could you imagine Chris Paul coming back to be the head coach of the Suns? That would be absolutely ridiculous. But I'm leaning more towards that. I mean, come on, you got the rookie GM. Let's bring in that, I guess, rookie coach, head coach, right? And let's see if we can reset, right the ship and create some new culture here. And you know what, guys, and see if these guys can all get aligned, right? And build a new identity. So that's what I would hate for them to go and hire a Mike Malone. I mean, that's a whole story in itself, what went on over there in Denver. But that's kind of where I'm leaning. You know, get the small guy, bring him in here. Let's reset, you know, stay away from some of those big name guys, because the last thing we need is to pay another, you know, big name championship winning coach a $60 million contract and then fire him 2 years. I mean, I don't think HBO wants to pay another head coach that doesn't even coach for the team.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mentioned it on the stream a couple weeks ago. It was one of the Van Gundys. Which one's coaching and which one's commentating? Jeff is.
They're both commentating now. Yeah.
Oh, wait, no,
that's not true. Stan Van Gundy. Where is he with now?
It was the Clippers, right?
I think so. With Tyronn Lue.
With Ty Lue. Yeah. Whichever one's not coaching, he was on some podcast or some show, and he was basically saying that the Suns head coaching job is the most attractive, because you get a 4-year contract, you only have to coach 1 year, and then you get paid for the next three. Not a good reputation to have, not a good perception for your franchise. So I think being patient, getting a guy, first year head coach, and I honestly have no problem with them taking their time with the coaching hire either, because there's no other teams hiring a head coach right now. Every other head coach has either been announced for next season or is already under contract for next season. Now, in this league, in any professional league, everything's subject to change. Someone could have a disastrous end to their playoff run here, but you make it to the second round of the playoffs, your job's probably going to be secure unless it's just an absolute nightmare. We'll see what happens with Cleveland. Just kidding. I have no idea about that. But I mean, again, to go back to the GM conversation just a little bit, and Mike, I'm curious for you to chime in on the coaching topic, but a name that was floated out as a potential GM hire was Bob Myers. And he came with his own potential negatives as well, where, of course, he built the Warriors dynasty and got great success there. But one of his terms, and I think he did show a little bit of interest in Phoenix, but one of his conditions was that he was able to do it largely remotely. He wanted to stay in Los Angeles, stay in California, and be the GM of the Suns without being in the building on a regular basis. And I think that would have been an absolute disaster. I think you need a guy that's in the building with his pulse on the team, talking with the players, talking with the coaches, be interacting with the staff, and not just on a phone call or a text message or an email. So as attractive as a Bob Myers is for his resume, as robust as it is, I'm willing to give Brian Gregory a chance if the alignment is two ways and not just him being Ishbia's yes man.
Yeah, you need somebody who has boots on the ground. Are you kidding me? With the way that the past couple of seasons, the head coach struggled to communicate with certain players. Are you kidding me? So, sometimes the higher up leadership needs to step in and be the buffer, or kind of try and put together a relationship when guys are hard headed and egos don't align, right? And we got the alignment guy. you know, so this is the perfect guy to step in this kind of situation. You have to give him a chance at the end of the day, gentlemen. I mean, there's no other way to sugarcoat it. This is the guy. This is who we have to put our trust in to turning the ship around over the next couple of years. But I think, Chris, you had said it too perfectly. Like, our expectations for the next 2 to 3 seasons have to be that we aren't going to be competitive to a point of winning a title. Now, competitive to making the playoffs should always be the bare minimum, but yeah, it's going to take some time, and that's why I'm excited for the way that they're approaching this head coaching search as well, right? I got some vibes of after we fired Cliff Kingsbury for the Arizona Cardinals, and you guys remember, you know, Michael Bidwell came out and said, "We're going to cast a wide net." And what did Brian Gregory say exactly today? The cast of the net will be the same width. And we already know that we've seen success with the Arizona Cardinals. So I'm very hopeful that, you know, they're going to do their due diligence in finding somebody. But at this point, I'm aligned with you guys. Somebody new, somebody with maybe not the most experience. It never hurts to have head coaching experience, but we don't have to go out and try and, you know, pick up somebody who has won a championship, where that's what this regime has done the past 2 years, thinking that that's the end all be all for the leadership and the voice. It doesn't have to be. It's almost like the changing of the guard is happening in front of us, right, guys? Like, we're seeing, you know, kind of the last ditch efforts of guys like Steph Curry, LeBron James, Kevin Durant. And it's the same way with coaches. Greg Popovich is gone. You know, somebody like Mike Malone, who was in Denver for years and years, we already know the story with that. But it's the youth movement that's coming in. So an ex-player is somebody that I'll keep my eye out for too. But at the end of the day, basketball is still so far away. I'm not pinpointing my focus on the head coaching search for the Phoenix Suns. We got a lot more juicier things to worry about right now.
Exactly. And again, like I said, they're in no rush to make a hire, nor should they be. So I think, you know, only time will tell. There's going to be plenty of time for us to get into the Suns. That they don't play again until October, the end of October. So we have a long road ahead of us. I'm sure we'll check back in when they make a coaching hire as we get closer to the draft and the NBA Finals end. But fellas, why don't we pivot here just a little bit? There's some good, there's some bad, and there's some ugly with the Arizona Diamondbacks. I think we should start off with the good, though. And the good is the Arizona Diamondbacks on Monday announced their brand new City Connect jerseys, celebrating their Arizona birth and paying homage to past jersey iterations. And it's the second iteration of their Serpientes jerseys. They're all purple, white pants, purple hat. Got a little bit of a snake pattern. If you tuned in on Saturday when we did our live stream for the 999 challenge, you may have seen we were looking at the leaks, and pretty close. They ended up being almost right on what we were expecting. But I think it's a really, you know, clean jersey, honestly. I kind of come around to it. I wish that the front font, and you'll see it here as we're playing this video if you're watching on YouTube, but I do wish they would have gone with Arizona across the far front. The Serpientes, I felt like, was unique to that tan jersey, and I get they're trying to keep that theme for their City Connect, so I understand why they did it. I think just for me personally, I think it would have been a much cleaner look. We were kind of, again, on that live stream, you can go back and watch. We were looking at some of the renderings people had come up with. But curious what you guys think. I mean, Tallman, are you rushing down to the team shop to get one of these? You were down there last night. Did you see him in person?
I was, yeah. And obviously, there's a bunch of them in the stands. People had already bought a bunch of those jerseys. Chris, I'm aligned with you. I think our alignment's pretty good on this. I kind of wish that they went away from that Serpientes as well, because the same thing happens in my mind when I see that. I just picture that tan color. And I'm the one good part about it, okay, because I've been super negative so far on the stream, is the going back to your colors, you know, the purple and teal. I mean, that's awesome that they did that. I'm still in that camp where I hope that they permanently go back to those colors, but, you know, that's going to probably a far cry away. I can dig it though. I don't know if I would line up to purchase one necessarily. I still got to buy the regular jersey first for as my first baseball jersey purchase. But I'm digging it. I guess they're going to be wearing them at home games on each Friday night at home. So it'll be cool to see something new. And then again, like I said, that purple and teal, it's always something good to see.
No, I'd agree. I'm glad we're nice and aligned here. Curious if, you know, like Jerry here, who's playing model, he's wearing the red belt, which I think is cool because it's also, you know, like they're trying to incorporate all parts and things of all their uniforms. So the red has obviously been a big part of this team's identity for well over a decade now. So curious to see if that's going to be a thing uniform wise that they all do. I think they can wear different belts. There's different pieces of accessory that guys are allowed to wear. I'm sure down to the cleats, we'll probably see some guys in some real loud teal shoes. Sure, we'll see some guys in all sorts of shoes, but cleats. Let's not get it mixed up here. But you even see here in the right-hand side of the Twitter post here, looks like some gentleman, Ari, the something or another, said, got to throw some copper on there. And don't know how they'd pull it off. Interesting idea, though. I mean, Mike, we've chimed in. What are you thinking?
So, gentlemen, we've been aligned this entire podcast to start on this Heat Check Live. And I'm going to pivot. I am not aligned with you guys. I do not mind the Serpientes. Am I trying to say that it should have been one way or another? No, I do like it. And I think the biggest reason why I love what they're doing with this City Connect jersey is they listened. They finally fucking listened that all we wanted was a purple and teal jersey back. And it took years, but they got it done. And come on, you got to give some shout outs to some of these nods, man. That 1998, obviously, it's the, you know, it celebrates the establishment of the team. There's also a little 48 inside of there, which is a nod to Arizona becoming the 48th state in the United States. You got the flag patch, something that we've been screaming at the Arizona Cardinals to do, especially when they were making their jersey transition a couple seasons ago. And then Arizona born, man. I mean, this just screams Mr. Benjamin, a purchase that needs to be made. It's all Arizona, baby. So am I running down to the team shop just yet? No. But am I going on MLBshop.com and starting to figure out which one I'm going to get and maybe a nice little hat? And who knows? I saw some really nice Nike Pro pants as well. I even heard rumblings of Nike is going to be doing some like Air Max 270 matchup shoes for each of the City Connect jerseys as well. So there's an Arizona Diamondbacks pair that could be floating out there sooner rather than later. But I mean, this is what the Valley has wanted for so long from this Arizona Diamondbacks club, and people who have been following this team, who hold them close to their heart, especially as a kid, you know, us. Our only one and only championship is the 2001 Arizona Diamondbacks, and everything they did was to nod back to that. So I give them absolute mad props. But okay, I'll come back into alignment with you guys. Arizona one would have been cool too, right? I would have bought that one as well.
And maybe, you know, next time they roll out new uniforms, I think, what was it, last year was when they did the updated uniforms. So maybe they add a permanent purple jersey back into the rotation. I think a lot of people would love to see that. Tom, and I'm just thinking out loud here, I actually don't know this. For a while there, they were doing the throwback Thursdays where they were wearing the white and teal. Are they still doing that?
Yeah, that's right. No, I don't. No, they're not. I don't know why. I don't know why that stopped, because that was a bummer when that stopped, because that was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was really sweet. I would love to see them do something like that. And at the very least, like I was saying, bring some form of purple or white with the pinstripes. Or I know, even as much as I'm not so high on him these days, Zach Gallen was really loving the vest, the old school vest style jerseys. I think that was one thing we had talked about on a live stream maybe last year or the year before, where just they've done such a good job of doing things for the fans. I think this a simple jersey adjustment like that would be really, really easy to do. But fellas, that was the good. Now we got to get to the bad and the ugly, which kind of go hand in hand. I don't want to say the Diamondbacks are bad. In fact, they are very average. Right now, they're 18 and 17 on pace to win about 83 games this year, which is about 10 or so games less than we kind of projected them to. So not the end of the world, not to say they can't go on a run, win 8 out of 10 here and there, but not quite what we wanted to see to start now that we're 35, getting close to 40 games into the season and starting to play tough opponents. We dropped 2 to Philly over the weekend, and now it's looking like we could potentially drop 2 to the Mets as well. After getting 2 of 3 in New York, of course, we mentioned we lost game 1 yesterday, 5-4. Right now, last I checked, currently still down 1-0. Still early, though, bottom of the fourth. I think overall, my biggest concern has been the lack of production from some of our guys that we grew accustomed to seeing be productive. Eugenio Suarez came out the gate hot, but cooled off quickly. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. has been basically non-existent. Randall Grichuk has 0 home runs on the year. He's batting .212. Gabby Moreno has 0 home runs on the year. I think he's batting right around .200 or so as well. His OPS is absolutely atrocious. It's funny. I think I was looking today and the D-backs are top 10 in home runs for our teams, but it's 2 guys on our team that have all the home runs. It's Corbin Carroll or Eugenio Suarez, which is funny looking at his average. It's basically he's hitting it over the fence or he's getting out, you know, one way or another. But I think aside from the batting, which, you know, does kind of ebb and flow and comes and goes, the inconsistency that I've seen the most has been with our pitching staff. And yeah, been banged up. There's been injuries. Hell, even who is it? Corbin Burnes couldn't make his next start or his last start, I guess, yesterday. And instead we had to get was Ryan Nelson who was on the bump instead. So guys, I mean, it's, I guess I'll just ask a question and maybe was it Tallman? You want to chime in here first? No, Mike, let's go Mike first. Is it time to panic?
No, it's not time to panic. Let's look at the standings real fast. What are we at? 5 games back, if that. 5.5, okay. So don't love that. But if we look at the wild card as well, I don't think we're that far out. Only 2 games back. There is start to be concerns about the starting pitching. Absolutely. I think you have to start getting into that situation because what are we at now? 5-6 starts from guys, you start to set a trend after that, right? You can't be that inconsistent for that long to think that you're really the switch and start moving and flying in a different direction. Now, I will say that did kind of happen for this Arizona Diamondbacks team after the All-Star break last year. You guys remember that. So that's why you don't have to be concerned. But it's just so damn disappointing. You really wanted to see this team come out firing on all systems to start this season with the addition of Corbin Burnes, with another year of continuity, with Corbin Carroll coming off of a good second half stretch after he struggled the first year, the way that Eugenio started this season as well. But man, yeah, the injuries are starting to become a big bugaboo once again, gentlemen. I mean, we have to throw Ryan Nelson out, who has been a long reliever to start this season, who did okay until he started struggling with command. I think at one point he had 4 or 5 walks last night. Then Tallman hit us with the infamous picture right before Pete Alonso smash. And we're, you know, coming from behind once again. That's all this team has done to start the season. Start slow. I mean, we were getting no hit right now through the fourth and have to fight and claw back into games and pray for these magical eighth innings consistently. Like, you can't live like that, not only for your club, but for your damn fan base at the end of the day, for us just holding on to the chair for dear life, man. But the right-handed batting has been absolutely atrocious. Lourdes is finally over 200, but Eugenio has been bad outside of his, you know, spurts, his 4-run games and the first 5 games of the season. They pulled Gabby Moreno today, coach's or manager's decision to not start. And that's why they went with Jose Herrera, because he's been struggling as well. So they're just trying to, you know, what is one of my favorite sayings? They're trying to fit the square peg into the round hole right now. And all of these decisions that Torrey is making, he's trying, right? We do have a relationship with Torrey that we feel like he overmanages games, and that can come down to almost a certain situation, guys. I would say last night with Alec Thomas on first and trying to put down the bunt with Perdomo, the guy has been one of the best players to start this year. 2-0 count, get him out of that stretch. Don't have him place down the bunt. Or, like, we know that Perdomo struggles with bunts as well. Like, that's not the guy to do in that situation. Why even have it? Like, you got to get the bat on the ball at that point. Gabby, I'm all over the place, and the tangent is going crazy here. But this is where the Diamondbacks have put us mentality-wise, because we see the promise of this team. We see the young core that is going to be good for years to come. It's just tough that we haven't been able to put it all together to start a season, it seems like, since our World Series run. And with the expectations so high, you're just waiting for it. But going all the way back to it, Chris, not time to panic yet. I don't know how Tommen feels about that. You're not panicking, are you?
No, it'd be silly to say you're panicking with 120 games left to play. But on the same note, I mean, the National League is just crazy competitive. I mean, our division is ridiculous. I mean, yeah, what you said, we were two games back of the wild card, but if you look at all those teams that we're going to be fighting for that wild card spot, those are good fucking baseball teams. And right now the D-backs just aren't playing their brand of baseball. It's almost like they're not aligned and they just lost their true identity. but no, it's not time to panic. But you're starting with the pitching, where, you know, where you lead it, led Mike on with that question. It's the starting. It's crazy that something that I thought was just a no-brainer, was a slam dunk. Corbin Burnes is going to come in here and he's going to be dominant. I can't believe, what is it, May 6th, that I'm sitting here and I've been disappointed by what he's brought to the table so far. It's hard not to be, right? And then we get that surprise news on Saturday that he's going to miss his next scheduled start. And what, today he got his first career cortisone shot to address his shoulder inflammation. So this whole Corbin Burnes tenure in Arizona has just been so weird. It's been strange, starting from when the manager didn't know his routine to start the season, going into just how inconsistent he's been, and now this injury coming out of nowhere. And then you look at Zach Gallen. Every time Zach Gallen has a start, you go, okay, which Zach Gallen are we going to get today? Are we going to get the guy that is just lights out, and he's got incredible command and no one can hit him? He's got the swing and miss going. Or is he just going to get blasted? Like today, he had bases loaded. He walked Pete Alonso. He walked that run in right now. So it looks like we're getting that kind of start from Zach Gallen, where it's through five innings, and he's already at the 70, 80 pitch mark. And you know that he's going to get pulled real soon. And then guys, what the Merrill Kelly thing, I don't know where we can find some scientist or somebody to figure out what the hell's going on with this goddamn cramping.
Get this man a banana.
I don't get it. I really don't get it. It's come up his last two starts where it's like, okay, he'll be putting out a solid outing, but it's like fifth inning comes around and he can't make it. You got to pull him at 4 1/3. And it's like, damn, now we have to go to the bullpen early when he could give us six solid innings and set this game on a whole different trajectory. So what I thought was everyone was saying this is a top five rotation coming into the season, but it's like the wheels are falling off the wagon slowly before our eyes with just the health concerns, which we knew this was going to happen. And they're looking like geniuses for keeping Ryan Nelson around. Granted, he was decent last night, right? He did exactly what, you know, he wasn't going to get ran out there for 100 pitches because that's not what he's been preparing to do this season, right? So he did solid. It was great that they kept him around. But then the bullpen has just been, man, I'm sorry, but some of those guys that they have in that bullpen right now that are filling in for J-Mart and Puck, they're just not good pitchers, man. They don't belong in that bullpen. Is it Castillo? I forgot his first name.
Yeah, Jose Castillo.
Oh, man. It's he did come in last night, and I was like, here we go. Oh my God, he's going to serve up a meatball. But he did actually, he got through, I think, Alonso and whoever their cleanup hitter is. It's crazy that what you thought was, this was surefire pitching was going to be the identity of this team. It's just been one of their weakest spots. And then the offense is just, the consistency is just ridiculous. I don't know if you guys have any concern here. I know Cattell's been hurt, but some of his at-bats have just been, they've been uncharacteristic of Cattell. So we just got to pray that Cattell can get back into his last season form. And then you look at some of the guys around him. I mean, Gino Suarez, I mean, the guy has just been, he's been almost an automatic out recently. And then you look at him on the defensive side. I heard that he's got the most errors in the MLB right now, which I think he's got 10.
Oh, last time I saw it was 7, but I really wouldn't be surprised.
I think he's got 10. So it's you got to look at up and down this entire lineup. Aside from one guy, is it 7?
It's 7, yeah. It's at 7 least that's what ESPN is saying.
I mean, that's a lot of errors already when we're right at the beginning of May. There's a lot of baseball to be played. But the only guy that really looks like he showed up ready to go and just hit the ground running is Corbin Carroll. The kid's been an absolute stud. And God, even one of his weaker parts of his game was his arm throwing from the outfield into the infield. The dude's got a cannon this season, man. He's been working on that. He threw somebody out at home last night on an incredible play that the building just erupted. It was awesome. So, I mean, there's the one positive side is going to be Corbin Carroll, but everyone else just needs to figure out what's going on. And then you have Torrey Lavelle coming out to the game last night, and he said that the guys 20% of the time they're confused. What the fuck does that mean? Why is your manager saying that the players are confused? You know, and then even last night, I mean, I guess it makes sense because I don't know if you guys were watching, but the ball that Gino Suarez absolutely smashed the center field was like 2 feet away from a home run at the longest part of the field that you could hit a home run to. Josh Naylor, he didn't round second. He didn't go to third. So Gino Suarez got the longest single in MLB history after he hit it off the 20-foot wall in center field because Naylor wasn't paying attention and didn't get a good read on the outfielder, literally with his back to Naylor staring at the wall. Like, dude, you got to run. And instead of it being first and second, which it was because Naylor had a mental error there, it should have been second and third. And that game could have been a totally different outcome. We could have been talking about a win right now last night rather than that loss. So it's small things like that, which they keep occurring. And this is just so don't panic. But at the same time, a lot's got to change, right?
Yeah. And Chris, before you go, I got to double down on it. It's the small things. It's the little things. Even after we know that Alec Thomas was safe, but he even came out and said, okay, well, I got to get a better jump on it. The continuous errors, the mental mistakes. Is it coaching? Is it guys just not aligned? You know, like what's happening? Sorry. It's just too easy. This is a day of alignment. And yes, the Arizona Diamondbacks are not there right now. Right. And that's why they're playing 500 baseball. But sooner rather than later, you guys already know. And if you are paying attention to what's happening in the NL West, you cannot continue at this pace or else you are going to be finding yourself close to double digits back in fourth place from third place with the way that all three of those teams are playing. Obviously, the Dodgers are kicking it up a notch right now. The Padres are still coasting and the Giants just continue to play good baseball. So if we don't start picking up the pieces and start getting on a roll and we got to punch out, you know, it's almost going to have to be like 8 out of the 10 next series we got to win for us to feel comfortable getting closer towards the summer where this team is headed. But we know the schedule is tough, but they got to keep plugging along and figuring things out.
Yeah, man. I mean, very much like it is talking about the Diamondbacks. I'm all over the place when I start trying to speak on what's ailing this team and what's happening. And the Diamondbacks are just kind of all over the place. It's like it's not been easy to identify it's not, and it isn't just one thing that's going wrong. It's the inconsistent pitching. It's the cold bats. It's Josh Naylor not being Christian Walker. And we're used to having that steady presence on first base who can scoop balls out of the dirt and still make the out. Josh Naylor is not a gold glover like that. He's not terrible, but there have been several occurrences where we're watching a game this year and it's like, Christian Walker would have made that. Now, batting wise, it's hard for me to be hard on Josh Naylor there. The base running aside, he is batting .310, which is really good. With Ketel Marte, I'm not that concerned yet. He's only played 11 games. He missed a good stretch there. He's getting back into the swing of things, no pun intended. He does only have one home run, though, but one home run in 11 games, there are worse things. But what would you guys have said if before this season started, right in spring training, maybe right before, if I told you that Tim Tawa would have 5 home runs for the Arizona Diamondbacks? Would you even know who Tim Tawa is?
I was going to say.
I would have told you, who the hell is that? Yeah. Who the hell is that?
Who is that?
Literally. And it's guys we're just having to see on the roster and step into play that we wouldn't exactly expect. I mean, I've made my feelings known on Jorge Barroza. I never want to see him come up again. And it's that aside, though, I get it's early and, we got to pace ourselves and we're going to have these guys with options come up and down. But the guy I'm waiting to see is Jordan Lawler, who is in AAA. It's been reported that he will be brought up this year and not September call-ups. Like, he's going to be brought up and play a significant role on this team. But it's a head scratcher as to where exactly that's going to be. Geraldo Perdomo is a staple at shortstop. We have Eugenio Suarez under contract for this year to play third base. And now you could put him at third base, but then what do you do with Suarez? You have him DH against lefties. There's more right-handed pitchers than left-handed pitchers. So then you're just having Suarez waste away. There's been conversations about, can you have Lawler play in the outfield? I mean, I think a lot of people do kind of expect that he'll come up and be somewhat of a Swiss Army knife type of player where he's going to be playing a little second, a little short, a little third, maybe a little outfield, maybe a little DH. You're going to fit him in where you can, get him 4 or 5 game appearances a week, but that means that he'll be giving Ketel days off. He'll be giving Perdomo days off. He'll be at DH, and then you don't have Pavin Smith or Randall Grichuk playing in the outfield. Maybe Gurriel gets a day off. But at the end of the day, Lawler is a shortstop. He is an infielder. I think I would like to see him in the infield. Now, he is a young athlete. I'm sure he's perfectly capable of playing in the outfield. But I don't know. I at this point, I know I've maybe been a little critical of Lawler. He missed a lot of time with injury last year, but he's crushing it in AAA. And this team needs help. So how much longer do they wait before they make a change here and bring him up? Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
Well, I know if you guys are in the Valley and you're listening to Arizona Sports, John Gambadoro has been stating consistently Jordan Lawler will be a part of this ball club and it won't be a September call-up. Now, he keeps dodging the question. Tallman, you've been hearing this, right? He keeps dodging the when it'll happen, right?
So I think
that's where a lot of us are still kind of sitting because I don't know, guys, like, isn't baseball a game where you have to take advantage of when players are on a hot streak? I mean, Jordan Lawler is absolutely demolishing the baseball in Reno and playing some of the best baseball that he ever has in his life. And all we see is Gino Suarez getting every single day at bats, struggling, and like Tolman had said, is just an automatic out when he comes up there. When do you pull the trigger and just say, okay, Chris, I'm aligned with you as well. Gentlemen, we're aligned. Put Lawler at third base. Have Gino get sparing DH at-bats. Almost kind of put fuel to the fire for Gino to say, hey, it's shape up or ship out inconsistency. You just can't be a guy who just tries to go up there and hammer the baseball all the time. That's not how this team is truly built. We're to manufacture runs different ways. I mean, if you look at... Now I think the Diamondbacks are winning 2-1. All of them were on basically infield singles or, fielder's choices. Like, that's where this team finds success. And then you start adding in the long ball. We saw Corbin Carroll with another leadoff home run last night. Perdomo has had a little bit more pop this year, and I'm hopeful that Cattell will start bringing that as well. But this team is built to manufacture runs and not just go for it all the time. I mean, shit, guys, we saw it. Gino hit 4 home runs in a game and we lost. So I don't know if there's a true time frame yet, obviously, because then the other thing that they've been saying is their goal is when they call Jordan Lawler up, it's for good. It's to never send him back down again, either if he's not going to be on this team and they trade him. You know, and I think a lot of people should be aligned with that as well, because all he's done these past couple of seasons in Reno is prove that he's a guy who's going to be a true competitor and probably a star at the next level with the way that he's been baseball in Reno. But I'd rather get him up sooner rather than later, because that's been one of our biggest struggles as well, as right-handed batting.
No, Tallman, yeah, go for it. I'm curious. Do you think they should call him up sooner? Or I know, like Mike's been talking about Gambo's reporting. He's saying they want to try and get him, you know, 250, 300 at bats down in AAA. He's at, I just checked, he's at about 130 right now.
Yeah, I'd do it now. I mean, at this point in time, where's the harm in it? I know the whole idea of having him get to 300 bats is because you don't want to call him up so that he just sits on the bench and doesn't develop anymore, right? Because so the idea is, like you said, they got to find him consistent playing time. But right now, tonight, we're watching Garrett Hampson in the starting lineup. Tim Tawa has been in and out. You know, I would do it now, or I would do it in the next couple of weeks. It should be this month, the month of May, because this team needs a spark, right? And you don't, and they've been saying that a bunch. Oh, it's not Jordan Lawler come up and save the season. You know, this kid's not going to be able to do that. The stars on this team are going to be the ones that are going to have to save this season. Corbin Carroll, Cattell Marte. Those are the two guys that are going to save this season. But ideally, call them up sooner rather than later. And my ideal scenario would be Gino slides into designated hitter, and then Jordan Lawler is your third baseman, right? And then I did hear the whole plop him in left field because Gurriel is ice cold, right? Which that makes sense too. If you got to do that to get his bat in the lineup, then do it. I mean, shit, Kyle Schwarber plays left field for the Phillies. I think a young athletic guy like Jordan Lawler can play left field no problem. So I think that's a fantastic idea. But they need to drop Hampson, Tawa, and I know they like Tawa because he's got power, right? The 5 home runs. But I would do it right now. I mean, why the hell not? You got nothing to lose. He's a player. He's good enough that you can plug him into different places, whether he's going to fill in on Perdomo's definite days off that are upcoming, or he's going to be getting some time at third base, and then you just plop Gino into that designated hitter. Because I know Pavin Smith has been the guy. I mean, he started off the season great, but that's not going to last, right? Let's be realistic. I mean, he's been a little cold recently, and he's not going to be hitting 300 all season. I would be willing to bet on that. So you just got to pray that Gino would be able to survive a designated hitter and kind of get it back. And let's give him a little bit of credit. You know, I called him an automatic out. Last night he did have 2 really long singles where he smashed one in the left field corner, which he hit it so hard that he could only get a single. And then, of course, we had to explain the world's longest single to center field where Naylor fucked him over. But he did produce last night. He was a big part of that comeback. Did have 2 RBIs. But, I mean, I'm all about bringing the kid up now. Bring up Lawler now. What do you got to lose? We just need something. We need something different, because currently right now it just seems flat. It seems lazy. And it seems like, you know, it's just not working up. Bring this kid up. Put some fire under Gino's ass. Remember what happened last season when the fans were calling for him to get DFA'd? What did he do? He just turned it on. He went on an absolute tear. So I don't think, even if he comes up and sits a little bit more, maybe if he's only in and out of the lineup every other day, I still think that'd be productive for the team.
Yeah, I tend to agree. So much alignment today, and I love to see it. Hopefully the D-backs can find a little bit of that as well. I honestly, you know, the Geno thing, yeah, maybe you light a fire under him. Maybe he starts to play well and you still can figure out where to put Lawler within the lineup. Or maybe a team is looking for a power hitting rental and you can offload Geno and get a little something in return. He is in the last year of his contract, unrestricted free agent next year. We really don't have any need to re-sign him if we don't want to. I don't think, you know, in a perfect world, I'd like to see them trade him for a relief pitcher, but I just don't think any team is going to be willing to give up a worthwhile relief pitcher for a one half season rental. But that's the other, I guess maybe really just the last thing I wanted to touch on while we check in with the Diamondbacks here is what to do about this bullpen. It seems that we are likely going to have to wait until the trade deadline to really do anything of significance. It's hard to imagine a team is going to be willing to trade a piece of their pitching staff in May, let alone June. I think if I'm remembering correctly, the trade deadline is sometime early middle of July-ish. But yeah, so we're a good, you know, month or two away from potentially being able to address something. What do they do, guys? Do they just hope that some of these pieces that they have start to step it up? Justin Martinez had imaging done because his velocity is down a good 6 miles per hour, and it came back that there's nothing wrong with him. Jalen Beeks has been a diamond in the rough. We thought Shelby Miller was going to be that in his second stint, but then on Saturday, or was it Friday, he got blown up, had a bad outing. It's just, we mentioned Jose Castillo already. There's just not a lot of options and nobody that we can rely on. Like, there's not that Paul Sewald, you know, in 2023 on this roster right now. And it's, I think that's one of the biggest concerns aside from the offense itself is there anywhere that we can get help in the bullpen right now, or do they just have to ride it out?
Well, first thing they should do is, I don't even care if his name is incorrectly, let's DFA Scott McGow. Let's get him out of here. No, Scott McGuff. No, I'm just playing. We have to stick with what we got right now, guys. I mean, they've been trying to pull different guys up from AAA and bring people in, and that's what you have to do when injuries come through. But I'm going to keep saying it. I've been saying it before the start of the season. Torrey needs to pick a damn closer at this point, dude. Like, we know that AJ Puck, it sounds, I think I saw that he's getting closer to throwing, but you're still, you know, weeks away from him. Justin Martinez, there's concerns about the velocity. Shelby Miller has been great, but I think you like what he can do in regard to at least two innings if you need to stretch him. And Chris, yeah, you put it in the chat. It needs to be Kevin Ginkle. For what this team is at, where it stands right now with the injury set points, Kevin Ginkle coming back, you just throw him in that closer position. I'm tired, and this just goes back to Torrey being Torrey. He overmanages situations. Just put out Kevin Ginkle in opportunities to close out a game. I don't care about what the matchups look like, especially when you don't have Justin Martinez and AJ Puck or guys down towards the end of that bullpen to truly close out a game. But make the decision, okay? Then you can get fancy and long relief and what you have to do. And, you know, Jalen Beeks has been a great addition here, but we're kind of stuck at the end of it all. And Chris, you might be right. I mean, the only moves that will be possible is probably truly closer to the trade deadline, because this can go back to what we've been talking about. Basically, if you're worried about the situation, it's still way too damn early in the season. Teams are not going to be willing to give up assets right now unless it truly makes sense and you're going to give them a huge, you know, return. And I don't think the Arizona Diamondbacks are in the place to do that right now, because they're looking for those little pieces to just take them over the edge. So we're going to have to suffer. But what's new?
Yeah. Pain and misery, the life of a Valley Sports fan. Did look it up. I was a little bit off. The trade deadline is July 31st. So we're going to have to wait till the end of July, which puts us basically May, June, July. It's about two full months. May, June, June. Yeah, two full months away. But that's a lot of baseball, right? You're talking 50 plus games, 60 games between now and then. No, August. It's like 3 months. That's like over like 2.5 months at this point. So we're a long ways away. Yeah, we're talking like 60 games, 70 games until we get to that point. Tough. And by then, you know, you hope we're still, I don't want us to be hovering around 500. I want us to be 10, 15, 20 games over 500, but the way things are trending, it's hard to imagine. I will say, Mike, I at this point, yeah, Ginkle needs to be the closer until AJ Puck comes back and is healthy and shows that he can contend for that role. I would like to see that. And we are stuck with what we have. And I didn't agree with them sending Dre Jameson back down after just like three appearances. I know he was coming off an injury and they did need some help, but if you're going to bring him up, like we obviously know we need help. And you're telling me that Jose Castillo is a better option than Dre Jameson. Like Dre Jameson did not do nearly as bad as Jose Castillo has been. And yeah, he was serviceable yesterday, but I don't know. Maybe too much shuffling. You know, it's a fine line. I get it. And I know these guys are in and around baseball and they're the professionals making these tough decisions. I'm sure they have good reasoning for it, but sometimes I think you can overmanage, which is what we've exactly accused Torrey of doing within the game. But I think you can do that with your roster as well. And that's one of my fears, is that they're not giving guys a fair shake. And, you know, while I am critical of Jose Castillo for one bad outing, maybe they were a little too critical of Dre Jameson for one bad outing. But Tallman, want to give you a chance to chime in here on the relief pitcher debate, if you had any different opinions, or maybe you're just aligned with us. Maybe we're just in alignment.
Yeah, guys, there's some alignment for sure. Man, did Puck go on the 60 day?
Sure did.
Oh man, that's so painful. And we knew this was going to happen. Oh, look at all these awesome pitchers we have. And then we followed that up with, oh, don't worry, one of them's going to get hurt. Just unfortunate that two of our best ones in the bullpen got hurt at the same time. I mean, let's be realistic. Come on. Martinez, Puck, those are our two best pitchers in the bullpen as of late. Granted, they had their struggles, and for good reasons, they're on the IL so that, you know, they can get right, whether it's a phantom injury or not. You know, baseball teams love to do that. But I'm aligned with you guys. It's got to be Ginkle. Of course, we know Torrey. It's all about matchups to him. You're gonna see Shelby Miller in there as well. Yeah, did he totally shit the bed? But I mean, the guy's been absolutely on it the entire season. And this happens to the best pitchers ever to play the game. They always get got at one point in time, right? So you're going to see him back out there, I bet you, in the ninth inning in a close opportunity for Miller. But it's Miller and Ginkle. Last night, they brought in Ryan Thompson, and Francisco Lindor absolutely golfed one of his sidearm pitches right over the pool. That was a three-run shot that totally blew the cover off that game, made it 5-1. So Ryan's not that guy. You would just hope. Basically, I'm with Mike. I'm aligned with Mike. We're going to have to suffer. We're going to have to wait for these guys to get healthy and hopefully come back and they can figure it out, get back in the groove that we know they can. These are proven names. We've seen them do this before, but it's too early in the season unless there's some awesome relief pitcher that you're willing to give up assets that is on the White Sox or on the Rockies. But it's too early in the season where these teams haven't become definite sellers yet. And guys, if come July 31st, the trade deadline, if we're at 500, we're doomed. I don't even want to try to speculate on what our division standings would look like if we're at 500. I mean, we're I don't think at that point we can't afford to be a 500 baseball team July 31st and expect to make one of those wild card spots. This league is just too competitive this season, and it's unbelievable how top heavy the National is this year. And like, God damn, why can't we be in the American League this season? We'd be probably first in one of the divisions, or at least second with this current record. But I mean, where we're at, we just imagine if we didn't have Beeks and we didn't have Miller and we just had a bunch of Castillos. So let's be a little positive and be blessed that Shelby Miller's return to Arizona his second time around has been a success. And then that move for Jalen Beeks, that he's been a stud. So let's throw a little praise their way, and let's thank the baseball gods that at least we have them right now. Because if we didn't, it'd be looking pretty grim.
It could be a whole lot worse. You're absolutely right. But I mean, It just gets old. It gets tired, man. It gets tiring every year, year in and year out. Oh, if only we were healthy. Oh, just wait till we get healthy. I mean, look at the injury report right here. It's all pitchers. It's all pitchers on the first page. Now, I know Cattell is injured, position player, but I bet if I scroll, okay, ADC, I didn't know he was injured. Jordan Montgomery, I don't care. Blake Walston, don't really care. It's just tough, man. It's tough. It's something we're going to have to live with and, you know, work through. I had an overwhelming feeling today that this just isn't our year. And just because it feels like that in May doesn't mean it's going to feel like that in July or August. And if you, I'm sure May of 2023, if you had asked me, I would have said, no, it's not our year. Now, ultimately, it wasn't. But we made it to the World Series, and that was far exceeded anybody's expectations. So it's not impossible. Like I said earlier on, it's not out of the possibility that they can go on a serious run here, win, you know, 20 out of 30, 8 out of 10 stretches. You just got to hope. And yes, the National League, specifically the National League West, is the hardest league, hardest division in baseball, but you gotta play the hand you're dealt and roll with the punches. It's May, a lot of baseball left. We're gonna keep tabs on them. But fellas, it's the summer, man. We're getting into the summer. There's no football, basketball's winding down. All we got is baseball, so we're gonna be talking about it. But I don't know about you guys. I didn't have too much more on the docket for tonight. Mr. Benjamin, you got anything?
I got one thing. You guys see how big MHJ is? He's putting in that work. Have you seen this guy?
Damn. Look at this biceps.
Freaking yoked. Look at this kid. Now, the reason I wanted to bring this up is because I think we touched on it a little bit during the 999 challenge, and we've been talking about it with the Arizona Cardinals draft finishing up 2 weeks ago. But the hate that the Arizona Cardinals are getting for not bringing in another wide receiver, I don't understand it, guys, because if you truly think about what Marvin Harrison Jr. did his rookie year, I think it was, what, 845 yards, 8 touchdowns. He tied the rookie record for the Arizona Cardinals with Larry and Anquan. There's nowhere to go but up. This guy is going to be force-fed next year. Maybe not to the extent, but same with Michael Wilson. They already talked about getting him more opportunities. The ball can only go around so much. And I'm just excited to see that Marvin Harrison Jr. understands that maybe he didn't live up to expectations his rookie year, but this kid has quite a bright future in front of him, especially if he's going into the offseason getting to work like this already. Stop hating on this wide receiver room. Michael Wilson is WR2, Tallman.
Oh, relax. Pull up a picture of Michael Wilson. Let's see how wimpy his arms are. I'm just kidding. Because I didn't get to participate in any of the draft stuff. Michael, the alignment is so strong right now. I'm glad they didn't reach on any of those wide receivers picking with their first pick. And I love what they did with the draft going defense heavy, because what was the weakest part of our team? It was arguably the defense. So now there's no questions. We have the talent on that side of the ball. The only criticism, Michael, that would come to the play with the wide receiver room is you're running back. It's the same old cast of characters, right? So are we just going to be riding Trey McBride again? You know, I'm glad. The only player, is if T-Mac was there, McMillan from U of A, if he was there at the first pick, boom, that should have been an automatic, bring him in. Then that's, we'd be having a whole different conversation, because we'd have probably one of the best wide receiver duos in the entire league. If not in the future, they will be the best in the league. But I like what they did. They didn't reach on it, but I still think that a new face is necessary in that wide receiver room. I don't know. Michael Wilson could prove us wrong, but he did. The durability was on full display last season, so I'll give him that. But is Greg Dortch doing it for you, man? I don't know. Is the other Stanford receiver doing it for you? I I just think they need a veteran presence in that room.
Well, I think they kept Xavier Weaver on the roster last year. He didn't get any touches really, but because you have to see what he possibly can do as well. I think some people have been talking about, I think we had brought it up during the 999 challenge as well. Keenan Allen, I mean, what is bringing in somebody like that truly do for you, right? This team, if anybody, you need a speedster who can take the top off of defenses. Keenan Allen has literally never been that guy. Now, he's an incredible possession receiver. If you need clutch third downs, you can go for that, true. But then it comes back down to too many mouths to feed, guys. Too many mouths to feed. I don't want to be bringing in somebody that's going to be taking snaps away from, you know, even guys like Greg Dortch and Zay Jones, right? They definitely went to Zay and said, we're going to get you more involved in the game plan. And we know after what has happened the past couple of seasons, the Arizona Cardinals misused Greg Dortch to start the season, but then they got him the ball. And what do you know? He makes plays. He's a playmaker. You just got to give those guys opportunities. So that's where I'm like, bringing in somebody at this point, maybe just to challenge, but not saying you're going to be, you know, our 75 to 80% snap third receiver. Like there's nobody out there, A, and B, this front office, this regime has already told you through the first 2 years that this is about building young players. And there's nobody out there that can truly match what these young guys have the ability to do, I would say, at this point. So you got to grow with them. Michael Wilson, wide receiver number two.
It's just scary. I don't know.
No, it is. I'm with you there, but I think I am coming around a little bit. I agree that, you know, Keenan Allen, I almost said Josh Allen. Keenan Allen isn't the solution. I had thought initially, if you'd asked me a month ago, I wanted them to bring in a veteran wide receiver, but I don't know if it's just Mike convincing me or just having some time to reflect on it. But the reason I had Josh Allen on the brain is because you look at the Bills wide receiver room last year and it wasn't anybody notable. I mean, they took a bunch of no names and made it to the playoffs and had a pretty good run. It's not impossible. Marvin Harrison Jr. is expected to be a generational talent. And he was a rookie last year. Remember that. He was a rookie. Yeah, he had a tremendous college career, but a young guy, tremendous upside. Zay Jones has shown to be serviceable in his career. And Mike brings up a good point. There's a reason he agreed to sign and come back here. I don't think he would do that if he didn't think his role was going to improve over next year. And he's not going to be looking at a suspension this year. Michael Wilson was fairly durable and, usable last year. Greg Dortch, speedster. You know, you have now a good variation of height, speed, length, skill. I do think they should bring in one or two more guys, at least for training camp, you know, kick the tires on them, see what you can get, see what kind of different looks, you know, get a guy that's going to come in here and want to work hard. Cause that's another thing, like how much, and this could be unfair, completely unfair, but how much desire is a vet going to have to come in here and work hard versus just collecting one final paycheck? You need a guy that's hungry. You need a dog, especially with a young team that's trying to get up and going. I don't know. I'm less concerned today than I was a month ago, and I'm really excited about on the defensive side.
So what you're saying, Chris, is there might need to be a wide receiver bet run back between Michael Wilson and Zay Jones? No, Tallman? You're not interested in that?
I get to pick any other receiver other than MHJ or Trey McBride.
Okay.
I got to do some research, though. I'm not prepared to agree to anything tonight.
Sleep on it. We'll discuss.
There you go.
I'd be interested in maybe participating in like a games bet. How many games they play? Michael Wilson or James Conner, who plays more games this year?
I'm not taking that bet. I'm not taking that bet.
Yeah, I wouldn't touch that either.
I'm a stats guy. Give me stats. That's fair. We can put the money down on that. But here's one thing for sure. This is the last thing that I had for tonight, Chris. Then you can send us home. There is going to be a yearly jersey bet between me and VSP Tallman, and we're going to continue to figure it out. Chris, if you want to get involved in the NBA side of jersey bets, we can talk about that too.
All right, I like it. I don't want to be left out, so I appreciate that. We'll talk. Pass the outlet. We'll talk. We'll figure something out. Yeah, I mean that's about all I had, guys. If we're gonna be honest, Tallman, why don't you share with us any last thoughts you might have on the state of the valley?
Yeah, was today like our last good day of weather?
I think so.
It was cold.
Beautiful today.
It was awesome. Yeah. I'm just not ready for the summer, guys. Fuck. Anyway. Yeah, let's see. Mike, why are you trying to fuck me over again in another bet? That just got me. He's like, you want to run back? You know damn well Zay Jones is not getting more catches this year than.
Because I need to keep up in my Michael jersey Wilson. Collection so I can switch this thing out every stream. You know what I'm saying?
Got swindled. But no, hey, I'm looking forward to the rest of this D-backs game. Or excuse me, not the game. Well, I guess the game. I'm going to watch it after we're done. Rest of this D-backs season. Ready to get back out to another game with you guys. And yeah, let's prepare to die in the summer.
Hell yeah. I like how Mike said that the jersey bet would be a yearly thing. I think the 999 challenge will also be a yearly thing. Don't know if we can do that again for a while. I do think that we should do another watch party though. That was a lot of fun. Maybe not getting as intoxicated though. We'll see. I wanted Mike to share his last thoughts, but Tallman, he's looking kind of frozen there, isn't he?
Oh yeah, dude, he looks scary. Oh, goodbye, Michael.
He gone.
So on behalf of
I think what Mike wanted to say is that VSP Tallman and Chris Patrick do a really great job. He really appreciates everything we do here at VSP.
Yeah, and Mike is such a nice guy that he's just going to buy me a jersey just for the hell of it.
Yeah, he was going to say that he's just going to buy both of us a jersey to show.
I ain't buying you nothing. Some nice little technical difficulties to end the stream. You got to love it.
I do love it. I'm going to blame StreamYard for that one. I don't think it was your fault, Mike. Couldn't be.
All right. Well, did Tallman get his final where you guys BSing while I got booted out, or am I good to roll out here?
You're good to go.
Yeah, Tallman rounded it out. I was just stalling a little bit to give you some time.
Well, gentlemen, Chris, Tallman, always appreciate you guys. It's been a beautiful Tuesday. We got to rant and rave to a certain extent about some certain things in the Valley. Going to keep an eye on who the Phoenix Suns pinpoint as their new head coach. Going to start doing some research on what Serpiente City Connect swag I'm going to grab. But all in all, my favorite part about today was how aligned we all were. Gentlemen, appreciate you guys as always. Do you think that the quota, did we say it more than Brian Gregory or just right on the mark?
I think it was even.
Okay. I think he's got us beat though.
Oh, we were under. Okay.
Yeah, we had to have been under.
We're aligned. Well, we're so aligned. Look at how aligned we are. All right, we beat it.
All right, now we're over. Now we're over. Good.
Alignment.
We're good and aligned. A lot of fun. I love doing these streams. Like I said, every Tuesday, 7 p.m. If you've made it this far in the video or listening back on podcast streaming services, you're a real one and a true fan. And I'm sure you're already subscribed, but just double check. Tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell your haters. Make sure everyone is liked and subscribed. Really helps us out and gets us to build this little podcast and the Valley Sports Plug Network. I do have to give one shout out. I just got in the mail today my t-shirt from RS Go. Shout out Reggie. He was on Pass the Outlet a month or two ago. His clothing brand just dropped last month. I was a little late getting my hands on one, but glad I'm did. It's high quality, man. Honestly, it's really high quality. It's not like your friend in high school who started a t-shirt press company in his garage. Like, this is legit good quality clothing. And they have shorts as well. Mike has the shorts. He can attest for them. They're going to be doing some more launches here later this year, as I understand it. So hopefully we'll have Reggie back on to talk about that. But anyway, fellas, for Mr. Benjamin, VSP Tallman, and the whole Valley Sports Plug family, I'm Chris Patrick, and we'll see you next time. Peace.